Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. We have been talking for some months now about one of the most important and least understood battle spaces in that war for the free world, namely the telecommunications infrastructure of the future. Who will control it and with what effect? A man we've had the privilege of consulting with from time to time about this is our guest for this full hour of conversation about 5G, the network that is looming really at the horizon and headed towards port, I guess one might say. Declan is a telecommunications entrepreneur of the first order, having been in the business since the 1990s, having built networks in Europe, having been a player in the U.S. mobile and wireless systems since the mid-2000s. In fact, got involved, as I understand it, shortly after 9/11, when one of his family members was the worse for wear for having difficulties with telecommunications systems in the midst of the 9/11 crisis. His company is Rivada Networks. He is the chairman and CEO, and it holds, among other things, key patents to 5G. It is a delight to be able to welcome him back and to have a chance at some length to pick his brains about what is going on in this critical space. And Declan, I thank you so much for giving us a good bit of your time again. Thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome, Frank.
Well, I had the privilege of catching you on Kevin Freeman's show recently. It was something you taped, I think, a few months ago. So I'm interested in sort of taking stock on what has happened since we spoke with you last October. But before we do that, let's just lay the groundwork a little bit, if we could, please. Declan, remind us what 5G is. What it will do for our lives and what the potential is for mischief to be made if we're not careful.
Well, Frank, 5G is the next leap in wireless communication standards. It is the biggest leap since the advent of the cell phone. Some of your listeners will remember when cell phones first came out and what a change that was to our lives. Sort of, it's almost hard to remember now what life was like before the cell phone. But 5G is a leap forward in communications technology that will be as great as the leap from going from not having cell phones to having cell phones. It will connect devices and conduct services in ways that we previously haven't seen. The so-called Internet of Things that so many people have heard about, but you kind of, well, what is that? And people think, well, it's telemedicine, it's remote medical diagnostics, it's self-driving cars and such like things. Yes, it's those things, but it's an awful lot more. It is a whole domain of information that is being established in this sort of next industrial revolution of connected devices and information, a web where you will have, not two or three connected devices in your home to the web, but in your life, maybe hundreds of connected devices. So things to do with healthcare, with your job, with your banking, with your air conditioning, with your refrigeration, with the logistics that supply everything in our lives from fuel to food, and everything else in between. It's going to spur on very significant economic growth. I think really a leap forward further in living standards. It's going to help alleviate poverty further and will expand connectivity into rural areas that we haven't previously seen, so that rural-urban divide will, that there's at least potential for it to be somewhat, if not eliminated, then certainly improved by giving connectivity and access to information and services to people that previously have been priced out of perhaps being able to access all of those services. Think about it this way. Right now, you know, any of your listeners, think about how many smartphones you might have. You might have one, you might have two. How many do you have in your home? What are you spending a month on those? And on average in America, you know, people are paying on average somewhere between, you know, $50 and $70 per month for their smartphone. Some people are paying a lot more. Pew Research gives that number at $70. And the number of Americans that have a smartphone now is estimated to be something like close to 70% of the population. Now, if you were to drop that average price, now you're not going to have 50 connected devices at $70 a month because, you know, most people wouldn't be spending or willing to spend that much money. But if the average connection price was 50 cents a month or $2 a month, you may have a lot more connected devices than you do right now.
So let me just ask you if I can, because this is a part of the Internet of Things that I haven't been able to wrap my head around quite yet. Declan Ganley, there would be a separate charge, I take it, for each of the vacuum cleaners or thermostats or refrigerators or whatever other devices might be in your home, for example, that would be part of this highly interconnected 5G system in your own personal life? Is that how that would work?
Well, that's one way it could happen, but I think you're going to see much smarter approaches than that. Certainly, there'll be the devices and connectivity that you will pay for, but there'll be a lot more connectivity and devices that other people will be prepared to pay for. So for example, a service provider will very likely just roll in the cost of connectivity, because in a wholesale marketplace, they'll be able to buy that connectivity in bulk. So for example, reading your electricity meter, the electrical utilities will be able to roll out wireless electricity meters, and will be able to read electricity meters, you know, in wee hours of the morning, at where they can get capacity at a fraction of the price that they might be able to get it at a different part of the day. So if they're reading your electricity meter at 4:15 a.m., well, they could read, you know, 25 million electricity meters at the same time, and they could do it, you know, very, very inexpensively. You will never actually be, you know, charged as such for that, because the cost to them will be so small compared to the cost of the service that they're providing you.
Declan, we have to pause for just a moment. We're going to talk a little bit after a short break about what are the downside risks associated with this Internet of Things and the techniques for controlling all of it being in unfriendly hands. That and much more with the chairman and CEO of Rivada Networks, Declan Ganley, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're talking with Declan Ganley. He has been involved in the 5G space for some time. His company has patents that are relevant to it. And he has been raising an alarm now for some time about the possibility that this, well, as I say, brave new world of an Internet of Things, commanded, enabled, facilitated, otherwise made possible by a 5G wireless network that is now a building, could be truly transformative, a huge boon to society, potentially a very important ingredient in the technological and, for that matter, the economic development of a country like the United States. And yet, there is clearly implicit in what we've been told about this Internet of Things the potential for quite considerable danger as well. And Declan, there is a distinct possibility that a nation that is deeply hostile to the United States may emerge as the dominant force in this 5G domain. Talk to us about Communist China and companies like Huawei and ZTE that are being pushed forward by it to, well, essentially run the 5G show.
Well, as you said, 5G really is going to be the cardiovascular system of the cyber domain. You know, the roads and railroad networks of the cyber domain, and the cyber domain is now or is going to be the fifth domain of conflict. So you have land, sea, air, space, and now cyber. And the cyber domain is so pivotally important, and it touches every aspect and will touch every aspect of our lives and economy, that, God forbid, if there is another great war, the first 10 minutes of it will be fought in the cyber domain, and a lot will be determined in that first 10 minutes. It will make Blitzkrieg look like a picnic by comparison.
Blitzkrieg, of course, a reference to the German onslaught that in short order upended the battle plans and ultimately defeated the Allies in Europe for quite some time. So you're saying that the potential is there. Is there reason to believe that adversaries of this country, or if you will, enemies, have figured this out and are positioning themselves to take advantage of that first 10 minutes?
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, unless you are completely blind to the realities, you know, China has the PRC has stated, and this is not a secret, this is a public stated goal and objective of Beijing in the China 2025 program. Their plan is to dominate the global 5G domain. This is a stated public objective. And it's a brilliant, I have to say, plan on their part. And what they have been doing is they have been using really the flaw in the West system of how we have how we've allocated radio spectrum and run it for the last 20 years. They have used that to have struggling retail mobile carriers pick Chinese vendors of equipment. Huawei and ZTE being the two biggest, to pick them and use their equipment and technology to roll out their networks. Now, that has been happening already in the 3G and 4G space to a certain degree, but in 5G, Beijing has positioned itself to really dominate using these two companies that are joined at the hip, many people will tell you, and I would certainly tell you that, with the Chinese government.
And when you say that they've positioned themselves, Declan, just drill down on that a little bit. What does that look like, that one of these or both of these companies are now able to make, well, as they say in The Godfather, an offer they can't refuse to these characters?
Well, it looks like a whole of government approach. So it's every aspect of – so you're a retail mobile carrier, and your model has been – you buy an oligopoly over a block of radio spectrum in an auction, and you write a great big check up front for it to the government. And then you have to build out a network. So you want
And
to
that would be the U.S. government, that would be European governments, that would be whatever
British
country you happen to be in.
The Indonesian government, you name it. Yeah. So the carrier then needs to be able to deploy the network, to be able to, you know, turn on the network and start charging a rent. That's $70 a month or whatever it might be for connectivity through smartphones and cell phones. And what has happened is the Chinese vendors go in with the backing of the government. So you'll have the Chinese development banks, the Chinese sovereign wealth fund, vendor financing packages supported by export credit guarantee insurance from the Chinese government, and they will go in and they will offer discounted pricing on the equipment and extremely predatory pricing, I will describe it as, in terms of the financing. So they will finance your rollout, in some cases to the degree of more than 100% of the cost of the equipment. So in some cases, 115%, terms that we are hearing of up to 30 years, in some cases with 0% interest or very low interest rates. So unmatchable financing terms. And that has become a drug on which so many of these retail mobile wireless carriers have become dependent. And as they are planning their 5G network deployments, they look to these Chinese suppliers, backed by Beijing, to finance and supply the technology for these 5G networks. So that is how Beijing achieves, or would achieve, its stated objective of global cyber dominance of the domain by 2025. It's called the Digital Belt and Road Strategy.
Right. And a way in which this is being translated into political influence is that, for reasons we'll discuss here in just a moment, were the Chinese to control this digital infrastructure, this Belt and Road infrastructure, if you will, there would be very profound national security implications. The United States government has begun raising concern about this. And again, we'll talk about that in more detail here in a moment. But I saw a piece in the Wall Street Journal the other day in which small carriers in the United States are now mounting a concerted pushback against any effort by the U.S. government to say, we're not going to use Huawei or ZTE technologies. Is that right, Declan? And is this the predictable consequence of kind of the, as you say, the hooking up these carriers to a drug that they are now deeply, deeply, deeply dependent upon?
Well, my understanding of those smaller carriers in the U.S., and look, they're great, great operators, and you can't blame them. I mean, what happened is they bid for rural grants to provide coverage. The Chinese, they bid based upon their ability to get lower pricing from Chinese suppliers, which they got. The Chinese pay attention to them. Now, the scale of that problem in the U.S. is not very big, I have to say, and it is, I think it's, that can easily be resolved if those small rural carriers are given a bit of help to do that. The problem is much greater elsewhere in the world, in fact, everywhere else in the world. But here's how that problem becomes a problem for the U.S. If 5G technology, if Chinese 5G technology is predominantly what is being deployed everywhere else in the world, the scale... The economies of scale are such that it will force Western suppliers and providers out of the global marketplace. So years ago, we had a large number of providers of wireless technology in the West. We had Lucent, we had Nortel, we had Ericsson, we had Samsung, we had Nokia, we had and many more, Sagem, and Alcatel and others. And now we are left basically with Nokia, Ericsson, and Samsung. All those others have been squeezed out. And, Nortel at the time, when they were going out of business, they cited one of the reasons was that their IP was, going out to China faster than anybody expected, and in ways that weren't happy about. So these other guys have been squeezed out. And the U.S. alone cannot do its own thing. Even the U.S. is not a big enough economy and footprint to merit or justify a sort of a different system to what everybody else is using. So this is truly a global fight, and the footprint that we are talking about is a global footprint. That's we are either going to have the Chinese model, which is basically this model based upon retail carriers that say, this is the price, take it or leave it, or we're going to have to flip our model to a wholesale model where we have price discovery on capacity, which basically means that basically people's cell phone bills will end up being a lot lower, and they need to be for that internet thing of things to come about. But the Chinese, through this predatory approach that they've taken, have managed to capture so many of these carriers in different parts of the world, and in Europe and in some of America's closest allies, that those carriers' regulatory capture is really setting and shaping policy in those governments, where you're having, for example, governments that even banned Chinese 5G now having those bans, looking at overturning those bans, and because really of the powerful lobby that has been mounted by these carriers.
Declan, we have to pause. Much more with the chairman and CEO of Rivada Networks right after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back to this extraordinarily important, extraordinarily timely conversation with one of the industry leaders in the world mobile and wireless industry. His name is Declan Ganley. He is the chairman and CEO of Rivada Networks. To raise a very dramatic warning about what is in the offing as China closes in on its stated goal of dominating the so-called 5G, the fifth generation mobile network. And I just wanted to ask you to elaborate a little bit further, if you would, Declan, before we get into what do we do about this problem, to further clarify the stakes, because as you've mentioned, a number of allied nations of this country, the United Kingdom for one, are now perilously close to succumbing to this drug, it seems, of a Chinese supplied 5G network, to the point where, despite increasingly strident warnings by the United States government, Mike Pence, if I'm not mistaken, among our senior leaders have come up on the net on this. The president himself has a bit, at least in the past. And yet the British government's highly regarded intelligence services are saying, well, there's really nothing to worry about here, folks. We've got this completely under control. The Chinese will be working with us, and it's been independently evaluated and so on. So please just walk us through how grave the peril really is from a national security point of view, as well as this personal, you know, privacy of data and the manipulation of the things in your home.
You're going to have a huge percentage of the economy. I can't give you the percentage, but it's going to be very high. It'll probably be more than 50% of the economy in most developed nations that are going to end up being dependent on these this kind of connectivity. And to put that into context, what we're talking about is that, you know, everything is all of this information, all of these networks, or most of them in this case, would be operating and under the China 2025 vision and dependent upon Chinese infrastructure and technology. Now, you know, I have the greatest of respect for those officials in the UK that say, you know, nothing, we don't need to worry about it. We can mitigate those risks. You can't. You cannot mitigate those risks. These are software-dependent systems. These are computers that are out at the edge of the network. The carriers are trying to sort of fudge the issue by saying, oh, well, we'll keep Huawei out of the core of the network. But in 5G, the core, the difference between what they call the core and the edge of the network is blurred. So it's one giant network with very little difference or a blurring between the edge and the core. So this is more of a marketing spin than anything else. So imagine if all of our transportation, all of our ships and aircraft were being built in China. It's not that they necessarily would be being crewed by the Chinese Navy, but when you know what the points of weakness, vulnerability are, where the welds are, where the portholes are, what the engine temperatures run at and everything else, to compromise that system becomes much easier if you want to do it. And it is reckless to, when you have a system that is so alien to our system, where you have a system that is today running concentration camps with huge numbers of humans being put into them right now in China, a system with a president for life and everything else, I don't need to go through it all here, that a system that is so much in opposition to our way of life and to the fundamental principles of freedom, to hand over that kind of dependence to infrastructure and suppliers who are ultimately answerable to that system, that's reckless. We cannot do it.
I couldn't second that more strongly, Declan. And again, I'm so appreciative to you for raising this alarm. You are, to be sure, a bit of an interested party in how this all sorts out, and I think that needs to be acknowledged. And yet, it does seem, on the face of it, if you know anything about what the Chinese are up to, it is the height of folly, and indeed a formula for disaster, for us to be putting ourselves in a position where we are so dependent, whether it's from the national security perspective, whether it's from the reliability of the infrastructure on which so much of our economy, as well as our individual lives, will depend on truly a hostile power. This brings me to a particular anomaly that I wanted just to ask you about before we turn to, so what do we do about this, Declan? But at this very moment, when the United States government is making increasingly, as I say, urgent calls on allied governments and others to forego the temptations of this very seductive, toxic drug. The Federal Trade Commission is in the process of trying to dismantle one of the companies, or at least the business model for one of the companies that is key to there being an American alternative, at least at the hardware level, Qualcomm. And to add insult to injury, the Federal Trade Commission is using Huawei and another Chinese company, as you know, LG, as witnesses in essentially their efforts to take down Qualcomm's business model. Could you just take a moment to walk us through what on earth that is about and its implications?
It's a hugely important issue, and you know I think that Qualcomm have a very important role to play. But Qualcomm are a developer of intellectual property; they're not an equipment supplier. So they've been out of the equipment provision industry for more than 10 years now. So yes, it's very important, but the even more important issue here is, who's supplying the infrastructure and computing power that's deployed in these networks? And this is where, so the focus that the Chinese have on is advancing Huawei and ZTE in particular through these methods that we've talked about earlier. Now, I want to, for example, talk about how they do that. So we've talked about the UK a little bit. So just this past weekend, there was a story in the Financial Times about the UK sort of rolling back on what looked like was going to be a ban to say, we're not going to do one, we can mitigate against these risks. What's happening is China is picking off even countries in the Five Eye Alliance. That's Canada, the UK, Australia, New Zealand, and the US that share intelligence. And what they're looking to do is drive a 5G wedge right into the Five Eye Alliance. And they are using the vulnerabilities of places like the UK right now. So the UK is in the middle of Brexit negotiations. Brexit happens in another month in the UK. The UK has to go out and cut new trade deals all over the world. And the UK's fifth largest trading partner at the moment is China. And in fact, China is probably even more important to the UK economy potentially in the future than even its fifth ranking position would suggest. So China has been using that, and the lobby inside, the carrier lobby in the UK has been using that to frighten the British establishment into saying, look, this, we cannot pick a fight with the Chinese on this issue right now. You know, let's look for reasons to not do it. New Zealand. The Chinese have squeezed New Zealand. New Zealand did impose a ban a few months ago. They're now talking about reviewing that. They've turned aircraft around in, from traveling from New Zealand to China. They have started to squeeze New Zealand in all sorts of ways over this 5G issue. You know what's been going on with China since the arrest of the CFO of Huawei in Canada, where the Canadians are getting squeezed by China. They have chosen this ground to drive a wedge between the Five Eyes alliance, and they're looking for the Achilles heel in each Five Eye country, and they're trying to pick it off one by one.
Declan, you have been talking about the specific alternative to what the Chinese are doing in terms of a model based on a sort of wholesale approach to access to spectrum. And we're going to have to pause in about a minute and a half, but just very quickly, could you set the stage for us on why that kind of approach is both desirable and available to us?
Yeah, the current model that the Chinese are using as a Trojan horse is using these retail carriers who are trying to prop up the price of data and have a lower price of equipment. The way you flip, the Chinese have made that their model. So it's not the Chinese that are doing the lobbying in London, for example. It's the mobile carriers that are doing the lobbying in London. And the way you flip the model on the Chinese is you shift to a wholesale model, and the wholesale model drops the average price of a gig. It drops the average price of data so that you're going to be able to have all of this connectivity that we've talked about, but for a lot less money. The Chinese advantage, the Chinese approach has been to subsidize what is an obsolescent model of retail mobile wireless. This model where there was the upfront auction and then it was sort of this rent-seeking model. They've used that model and harnessed it against us. If we shift to a wholesale model and we drop the average price of a gig, that destroys the Chinese business model. It will set them back about 5 years, and it will give the West the opening and opportunity to flip the table and dominate 5G.
We're going to pause with Declan Gunley for our final segment. We're going to discuss how do we do that, practically speaking.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back for the fourth and final installment of this remarkably urgent conversation with one of the leaders in the global telecommunications industry. Declan Ganley is his name. He is the chairman and CEO of Rivada Networks. Declan, you have painted, I think, persuasively, the picture of how high the stakes are for who will control the 5G networks of the future. What you have described in terms of an alternative approach sounds, on the face of it, very appealing. What are the impediments to having adopted a wholesale approach, as you call it, to spectrum? How would that even work? And what are the prospects for that being adopted?
Well, the impediments are the incumbents. That is the rent seekers who are sitting on blocks of spectrum and using those blocks of spectrum extremely inefficiently, overcharging for them. In the US, for example, the Americans pay more than double the average price that someone even in the UK is paying for mobile wireless. They're paying up to five times more than somebody in Germany or France is paying for mobile wireless. So Americans, frankly, are being hosed. Now, the way they're impediment number one because they don't want things to change. Now, the problem is is that these guys around the world, their equivalents around the world, by not wanting to change and by wanting to keep this obsolescent model in place, have made themselves vulnerable to the Chinese and have been used as a Trojan horse by the Chinese to do the Chinese lobbying for them so that they can get this equipment in. So what governments need to do, most governments still have large blocks of spectrum in their defense departments or their ministries of defense. Normally, in most countries, it's around 20% or more of the radio spectrum. And the defense departments use, they have very, very essential uses for that radio spectrum. But for lots of it, they don't need it for 99.999% of the time. They're not using it everywhere all the time. So you could deploy a 5G network in blocks of that radio spectrum, give ruthless preemption to the security services so that they have it. They don't lose ownership of it, but they make it available for the economy to use on a sub-priority access basis. And what you would do is you would, the private sector, and there are some of the world's biggest infrastructure funds that will pay for this and put up the money for this, the private sector will fund the deployment and private funding and building and operation of these 5G networks. And they would be purely wholesale. So they would be carrier neutral. You don't pick any winners. It's privately funded and operated. And that capacity is available on a wholesale basis to the existing carriers. So any of the existing carriers can access it. And so can new entrants. So all sorts of MVNOs and cable companies and Coca-Cola and car companies and fuel companies and anybody, the FedExes and UPSs of this world, anybody that needs large amounts of bulk capacity connectivity will be able to come in and buy capacity at the price that suits them. The on and off ramp will be easy. It will be as easy to set up as a network operator user as it should be to set up a website today on the internet. That's how we have to change it. The Chinese have no response to that type of model. The technology exists. The spectrum is there. We just need the will to do it. But you have to understand that the most powerful opponent to this is the incumbents that are sitting there at the moment who are rent seekers and who do not want the world to change. And that's what China has exploited.
As a community of national security-minded people in our audience, Declan Genley, it makes one a little nervous that the Defense Department would be giving up spectrum, even with this, as you say, ruthless preemption capability. As a practical matter, if they had to ruthlessly preempt and the Internet of Things depends critically upon such spectrum, would that not be devastating to the economy were they to do it? Is that not a consideration here?
No, not at all. First of all, they wouldn't be giving it up. They would keep title to it. And I'm not just talking about the US. This would be anywhere. I mean, the thing is to do this, you have to do it where radio spectrum is, right? And most radio spectrum at the moment that's still available and suitable for 5G happens to exist in ministries of defense, just for historic reasons. So they don't lose title to it. They're just making it available to the economy on a sub-priority access basis. And of course, there's a revenue stream that would be generated from that. But this is the opposite of nationalization. This would be harnessing the private sector and capital markets to solve this 5G issue. And it needs to be done right now. Now, that is not to say that there is, and I strongly believe that there is other radio spectrum out there already that's not in ministries of defenses, but that is in other parts of the economy and elsewhere that would end up being pulled into these wholesale networks. Because you have people right now sitting on large blocks of spectrum doing nothing with it or using spectrum very inefficiently where they're only using it for 30% of the time. They'll make more money if they put that kind of spectrum into this kind of pot.
I see. But so, you have to create the critical mass that appeals to them.
Exactly.
All right, Declan, finally, and we're almost out of time, there is coming up, as you mentioned when we spoke last, a very important Mobile World Congress taking place on the 25th through the 28th of February. You were warning that that may be the moment when the Chinese, all other things being equal, will take a victory lap, essentially declaring that they've won this 5G competition. Is that likely as things stand now? And is there still time if we, in the United States at a minimum, were to adopt this this model flipping approach of yours to have things come out differently there and beyond, of course?
Well, let's put it this way. Where there's a will, there's a way. If you announce this model flipping approach, that throws the whole Chinese financing plan into consternation. So it'll knock them back at least 6 months, okay? But Barcelona is the key moment. It's the key moment that the Chinese have been working up to. It's not by accident that that statement came out in the Financial Times over the weekend about the Brits backing off. You saw it was followed up within hours by a statement from the Chinese government, you know, attacking the U.S., you know, celebrating the fact that the British are reconsidering. And you'll see more of that in the, over the course of this coming week. They already have signed 68 countries for either testing or deployment. They put a freeze on announcements of new 5G networks, where they've asked people not to announce them. I expect that those announcements will now be made at Barcelona. And I think, you know, having picked off one of the 5i countries this week was really essential to create doubt in places like Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, so that they might be able to roll them as well. We have to stand firm. We need to announce the table flipping model. Really, it needs to happen before Barcelona.
Yeah, post haste. So, very, very quickly, as I said, we've had senior U.S. government officials, you know, on the net, as it were, in Europe and elsewhere, warning allies and others not to go down this road with the Chinese. Do you see, Declan Ganley, evidence that that may translate into the adoption of the sort of approach you've been recommending and in time?
They have done a magnificent job. So I've watched what the State Department is doing and others have been doing over these last few months and even in the last week, you know, very intensely. So they are pointing to all the right things in terms of saying this is the reason why you shouldn't allow the Chinese into 5G. What we also need to do is say, and here's what you should do instead. And so we now need the here's the alternative. And if we can table the alternative quickly enough, I think people are ready, willing, and able to adopt it. And I think we can still win this. We are in the final furlong here, but this can still be won by the U.S. and the West. But we have days.
Declan Ganley, you have made a persuasive case, to my way of thinking, for adopting this sort of table-turning, model-flipping approach. There is so much riding on it. I urge all of our listeners to urge those who represent you in Washington or elsewhere who could have a say in this matter to adopt the open access wireless model, as it's called. There's more information about it at openaccesswireless.com. I encourage all of us to take this information aboard and urge the adoption of this approach before the end of next week. This is urgent, folks. Declan Ganley, again, the chairman and CEO of Rivada Networks, thank you for your time today.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.